Good day, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode of Mead and Moonlight, the Pagan Folk Podcast, with none other than the great Niklas Stefan from Wildcouts and the humble Kuhn from Seed. We are very excited to bring you another episode where we shall be talking about writing songs and then eventually bringing them to a studio to present them to you, the audience. And all the decision making and thoughts and doubts that go into this whole process. I think we have some nice anecdotes, and I think it will give you a nice view into the whole mind bullet that turns into a song and eventually turns into a great CD to be sold and presented on Spotify and the likes. And yes, I'm feeling pretty great tonight. I'm feeling excited to record this next episode. And how are you feeling, my dear Niklas?
Well, I feel very infected with your enthusiasm. That's how I feel. I mean, couldn't have said it better myself. We're starting, after sort of doing the whole playing live thing, we're now talking about the more the at home part, basically what Kuhn just said.
Yeah, I think it's easy to sort of forget about the whole process that goes into that. Like, you have the rehearsal, which is live. You have the show, if you eventually do get booked, which is live, which has all the energy components, the resonation. But then there's also, how do you project your energy and your the sort of what you want to project to the audience through a sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say it in a very bad way, but let's put it very harshly to make you understand, an emotionally void process. How do you put the emotions into the process of recording your songs, instrument by instrument, if you choose to do so? How do you find the right producer? How do you know which effects to use and which to avoid to keep having the acoustic pagan folk feel? Yes.
Yeah, that's all very high concept for the moment, but maybe we can start with something sort of simple. Do you remember the first song you've ever written?
Yes, and I wouldn't let anyone listen to it, even if I was pressured by guns or knives. But it's a fond memory, if that's what you're asking.
Ooh, now I'm very curious about that one.
Okay, so let me give you this short version, and I still won't let anyone that is listening to this hear it. There was a wedding of my aunt going on very soon, and they were asking if we could perhaps play, because we had recently formed a folk band, and it would be so cute, and the acoustics of the city hall would complement the instruments. So we wrote something in sort of Gaelic Celtic saying welcome, which is Falche. And it was not a great song, but yes. So yes, I do remember the first song that I ever wrote that didn't make it to the surface. But I also remember the first song that did. Still not proud of it, but yes, it's a fond memory. And does your first song have a more proud backstory to it?
Well, I mean, at least I'm gonna come clean and admit that the first song that I ever, I mean, I guess I didn't fully write it by myself, but I sort of had like the main idea, I guess. It is listenable to on all streaming services, and it's even printed on a CD. I think I've mentioned before that I came to the whole music thing pretty late. Vatkatz is, you know, the first and so far only band I've ever played in. So, yeah. And when I started out playing music, I only did it together with Nina when we were still living in the, you know, the village where we come from, and we were trying to do like folk and pagan folk music, just the two of us. And I had a bouzouki, a cheap one, and I knew from reading on the internet about Faun and Omnia that the really cool thing to do if you're a pagan folk musician is to tune your bouzouki to an open D tuning, because that's what all the cool kids do. And I did that, and then basically the first song I wrote was basically just strumming the open D chord for like most of the song, and then throwing in like a small chord progression for sort of the chorus. But most of the song is just me like droning on the open strings. So, which is, I think, pretty an obvious choice for when you don't know how to write songs.
Nice.
Which that song, by the way, is the very pagan folk song Canunos from our first album. You may check it out, and you'll hear what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So just like the last episode, listen to Niklas's anecdote here, and then listen to the song Canunos on all platforms. It's actually a shame that there is no video image of me listening to your anecdote about your open D thing, because I was laughing adorably at the story, and it felt completely relatable. As to, for you, it's like, okay, put it in open D, and then you have like the Omnia and the Faun thing going on. For me, that was the same. Buy a D low whistle, and you can play along all the cool songs, which I did. It was my very first whistle.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, and I think it's very interesting, because I think there's definitely certain ways that I would write for, you know, for a pagan folk song than, for example, for other types of music. I've been sort of recently, you know, dabbling also with, you know, creating other types of music on my own at home. And it's definitely like a different vibe that you put yourself into. There's certainly something to be said for being very inspired by a certain genre and then trying to emulate, you know, the things that you know, and then trying to create your own version of that. Were you ever, what was the very pagan folk thing that you liked so much that you wanted to incorporate it in your own music?
For me, for the Dutch people that maybe remember, there was this social platform before Facebook, which was called Hives. And I listened to the Schoenerli set, and I played saxophone from when I was 10 to 20. Then I quit music for a little bit, and then I taught myself to play whistle and flute. And I knew I wanted to play the Schoenerli set from Omnia. So I recorded that in my very tiny student room, which I paid hundreds of euro for, 9 square meters with a puking sink. I will tell you all about it if you ask for it. And I just wanted to record a Schoenerli set on my newly purchased low D whistle. And that was sort of where I built from. So there was a lot of pagan folk elements in there. It started out with like a soft, slow, beautiful melody, and then it went into the whole characteristic spitting into the flute and putting your voice through as well. And I felt very, I don't know, I was like, yeah, I'm doing it. And from there, I sort of built my arsenal around it. Like, okay, so this is it. This is cool. This is what I wanted to do. And I was like, okay, but this is not all I want to do. So now I have a huge collection. So it's actually great to have like a starting point, like you said, like you start somewhere, and it might not be something that you're proud of this day, but it's definitely like the I don't know, the forward post that launched the the Pagan Folk Offensive, which sounds very hostile, I know, that you're part of right now. So for me, it was playing that one song and then developing from there. And you had one of those. Do you have one of those songs that you really, I want to play that?
I mean, I think for me, it was a couple of found songs. Especially there's this found song called Rosmarin. And I think that was one of the first songs where I sort of figured out how to play that, you know, that sort of that main riff. And then I think until, like, for the first two albums that we did, especially on the second one, maybe even more, you know, there's this, it's probably different to what you're doing, since you are playing a very melodic instrument in your band. I am basically, my role in the band is basically to play rhythm guitar. You know, we have like flutes and harp and hurdy-gurdy and vocals and stuff like that. So there's, I am, you know, together with like the bass and the drums, I'm sort of like the backbone, I guess, to some degree. So what I do still to this day is a lot of the very pagan folky power chords, you know, with that's something that I, when I had figured that out, that's sort of what the sound is of a lot of songs that I liked, especially sort of the faster ones. You know, at that point, I only really knew Faun and Omnia as like the sort of like pagan folk bands. And a lot of what they do on the bouzouki is, you know, like hammering on power chords and playing those chord progressions to support like this very archaic sound, because with an open tuning, you are a bit limited in the type of chords you can play, because, you know, a real chord has at least three notes. But if you tune a bouzouki to an open tuning, you only have like two notes, basically. So just a very basic, simple three note chord can already be sometimes very hard to accomplish. I think there is probably lots of bouzouki players and pagan folk bands out there who can relate that. Like, so it's sometimes it's very, you know, when you want to put a little bit on a like mix up in there, sometimes you look at chord charts for the tuning and it's like, what, how should I reach there? And then again I really enjoy playing these sort of like basic, more basic, simpler chords, because I think it really supports the archaic and sort of like ancient feeling that we want to convey a lot within that type of music. And I remember for the first album, and then also, for the first years of the existence of the band, we had like a guitar player who played his guitar in a standard guitar tuning in E standard, and we would often have trouble figuring out how the bouzouki and the guitar would play together, because he would play more defined chords. So basically, I would play an A. But he would either play an A minor or an A major, and that would give the song a very different feeling and made it sound a lot more poppy and I guess more poppy is at least that's how I perceived it a lot, because if you leave the chord open, then it has more an open ring to it, and it's not as easily defined. But when you use like a more pronounced chord, then you put it in a very specific direction. That was a very long monologue, but I think I hope I could get some points across.
Well, I think you definitely got across that you and I completely perceived our journey differently. That's definitely, as a flute player, I'm like, open chords, yes. I always have the luxury of saying, yes, I have a flute in D, F, G, and C. build around that, please. Otherwise, I have to buy another 300 euro whistle, which has to be custom made over there. So it's definitely different and probably a bit more chained, which also makes it perhaps a wee bit easier. I did purchase some more obscure tunings and switched halfway through songs, but in the early days, definitely was like, okay, I'm playing this flute. You build around that. I have this sweet melody, and that's going to be the song. And then in the end, I was like, okay, so yes, you have the, okay, so yeah, so don't follow me here, guys. I was talking to people earlier today. You have musical theory. Like the Hafabra, when you follow a classical thing, you learn musical theory. And I told people today, musical theory is there to explain what happens musically. And music on its own is free. So you don't need musical theory to be a musician. Like, I was very bad at it. And I turned out to be a musician, of which I'm fairly happy about. So where do I want to go with this? Everybody, pick up music if you want to. And also, where you said, like, okay, I'm playing open. I feel the vibe that I'm putting down here. And then we have a closed chord, which is... maybe, I don't know, I'm not a chord guy, but which is more theoretical. It sort of sets the tone for the song more. And I can certainly relate to that when you write a melody and then you have a chord and you're like, oh, no, that's not where I wanted to go. It can completely change your song. So it's interesting to see the influence of chords on a melody that you felt was really like pagan folk-esque, and then if you put like the wrong chord under it, it might just be another pop song, or it might turn out to be blues, or so it's an interesting aspect of creating songs and sort of giving that over to your bandmates.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because you said earlier, you said that we probably approach things a bit differently, but I think we approach songs in that way, the same way, in that way that we both probably don't think so too much about music theory, because I'm also not quite bad at it, you know. It's not at all. I mean, you said that you don't need to know music theory to be a musician, and I agree. I think there's lots of great musicians out there who don't necessarily know how that works. But I think that's something that sort of I talk a lot about with our bass player, is that at some point, you know, when you're at least that's how I feel, and that's what I have also perceived in, you know, my own writing of songs, eventually you'll get a bit frustrated, because music theory also helps you to sort of like broaden your horizon and to sort of put new sort of tools in your toolbox, because there are certain things that you might have not considered before that could even be a thing that worked. And I know that when I these days figure out like a new chord shape with the open tuning, or like just some other more music theory stuff, I'm always like, oh wow, I would have never thought about doing that without this knowledge that I have now sort of gained. So I think there's definitely something to be said about sort of that, you know, while you don't necessarily need music theory, it's still a useful tool to sort of help you come up with things that you wouldn't have come up with, you know, before.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It is, in fact, a universal language that allows you to communicate what you are doing to another instrument that you wouldn't know about, or maybe a style that is defined by something like that. It's very convenient. Like, it can be very frustrating to be in a strange country and it's, oh, but I really like this. I want to buy this, or I want to go there. Come on, now, guys, let's all go there. But you don't speak the language, so the guy's like, okay, I think he wants to go there. Maybe we go there. And then it's not where you want to go. So there's definitely a lot of value if everybody speaks that language. Like, if we use musical, just reading sheet music or musical theory, chord distances, note distances, intervals, as a language. Let me be clear. I'm not understating that value for sure. It's just, I don't know. I think I just want to be like the advocate that says, like, people, I don't get all that shit, man. I can't do this. I can't do this, man. I'm too old for this. Like, no, guy, girl, just do it. Just pick up the instrument, and even if you can't read notes, if you have like a point that you want to go to, you don't necessarily need anything to get there. I think that's.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think you shouldn't let yourself be stopped by a perceived lack of knowledge. So, especially like with something, yeah, especially with something like pagan folk, or I mean, also other genres. But I think there's a lot of instruments in folk music, and just also the way that folk music functions that allows you to get into it quite easy, I think. You know, at least easier than something like jazz, probably, I guess.
Yeah, I remember playing Red Hot Jazz from the Roaring Twenties, and then I had like a chord schedule or whatever. I don't know the English name. I was like, okay, yeah, I have no idea what I'm doing. Just please write down all the notes and I'll play that. So it can inhibit you as well. It can feel overwhelming, which sort of deters you from doing it at all. And that's in every aspect of life.
Absolutely.
A shame.
So, I think we've talked about it before, but it's with writing songs for seed. It is often that you sort of like bring melodies to the band, and then you sort of write a song around that. Is that true?
I'm very happy to say actually that is something that was really something from the past. More, I mean, it still happens, but it's now more of like an equal thing that people bring lyrics or maybe a story or a legend, or with now Joe as well. Everybody brings their own best thing they have to offer from their instrument, because the other musicians don't aren't. Well, a master is a big word, but don't play the instrument as well as they do. So it's now more of like an equal thing. It could be like Gnome Next and Bones, like, Robin, I want to write a Dutch song, and I want this in there, and then I have this, and then we work on it together. And in the past, it would more be like, okay, I have a flute melody, let's build around that. So it's grown organically into where people bring their... like Vergeten Volk was Sarah bringing in the lyrics and the feel, like the notes, let's call it the notes, the and then we built around that. So yes, that was like old style, and now I think, and it really shows, and it will show on the next album, that it's sort of growing organically and it's resonating within all of us.
Nice. Yeah, I'm excited, because I remember being under the impression that a lot of the songs that I've heard, you know, were, especially on the album, were really flute driven. So I'm really interested to see where you've been sort of developing you know, the sound from there on. Interesting. Yeah. But I mean,
the thing is, like, I'm going to be playing the flute. Yeah. And I'm not going to be playing longer notes. It's an interesting anecdote. I'm completely impressed by Martin Seberg from Virelai Trolska Asinje Valraven. And when I first met him, it was in Holland. He was playing there with. What was it? He was playing there with Asinje, I think. And we were also playing there. And he was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of flute in there. And I was like, oh no. And then he said, but okay, it stayed interesting. Okay, thank you, Martin. But yeah, that's a thing that's... how long will it stay interesting? Does it matter if I and we still enjoy it? That's an interesting thing, but I think that's an eternal struggle. Like, with what other people want, should you be writing from that perspective? I don't know. I sometimes feel like, okay, Jesus Kuhn, can you do something else? It's tricky. It's tricky.
No, but I mean, like, with, I think your newest song, Getreten Volk, is already
nice.
Like is a very cool direction to take your sound into, and I think it still really showcases your style of flute playing, but it's more sort of integrated into like a more full song structure, maybe. So it is the song does not need to rely on just, you know, that one flute bit, but it's like a whole, every, like, you know, there's so much that sort of forms the whole song. It's very rounded out, and I think that's a very, you know, that's really ideal if you're in a band and everyone can bring their own sort of influences and ideas into it. Then I mean, that's really the best thing, I think.
Yeah. I feel you. Yeah. It's definitely I can call in sick and it would be okay. So yeah. That's good. That's good.
because I think with me, or I mean, I can only talk about my perspective because I don't want to assume anything. But sometimes I have ideas where I'm like, you know, this is just this idea. It doesn't need to be like the full song. It just needs to be a fragment of the song. Like, I have a cool melody, you know, can we do something cool with that? And then it develops into something that I wouldn't probably have thought of. And I'm super cool with it. But sometimes it's also that I come into like rehearsal or into songwriting with an idea and already having a very specific idea of how I want, you know, what I want everyone to play, basically. And then it's also very satisfying to sort of, you know, get that out. I'm just thinking back, we recently had, I mean, I guess it's not too recently any longer. It was like in October. Time passes so fast. But yeah, we had like a bigger songwriting session in October, and then again in February, because originally we would have been recording an album in April.
Which, I feel for you.
Ugh. And there was one song that is going to be on that album that is where I wrote like a chord progression and a vocal melody, and where I had a very specific idea of the sound of what I, you know, of what's basically, I mean, I hadn't written out sheet music and then passed it to the hurdy-gurdy player and said, here, Alana, play this. But I had like, you know, maybe can you play like, play something, and then no more, go more into like a different direction. But then we also had a song where we basically sat around and like, oh, it would be fun to have like another fast song on the album. And then I remembered that I had like a recording on my phone of that like bouzouki riff with like a lot of hammer-ons and pull-offs, and I played that. And then we sort of developed the song all together. And I just wrote that riff because I thought it was fun, and then it suddenly became a song. And I think those are my two... the two major ways that I sort of like to create within the context of the band. You know, either having a very specific idea and then trying to get that to work with the others, or just throwing in a sort of like idea, a melodic idea that is very, that can be interpreted by the others.
Yeah, it's like if I hear you say this, I remember some moments, or I remember a moment, like, you have this set list and all these songs have their own stories to them, and for some songs you're going to be more enthusiastic for, oh yeah, that song is coming up, or oh yeah, we only have the good ones, or I'm really invested into this one, and there's also going to be those songs that you're like, okay, yeah, I sort of fulfilled my role here, I sort of feel it, maybe not really, like, okay, those songs are going to be dropped very, very soon, because the whole band will pick up on that if your band's sort of in sync. Yeah, I think, like, the method that you said, like, talking about seed, like, where you drop something and everyone builds around it, that is something that has worked out best for us. Because we always stranded with the other method, that we were like, okay, I have this great idea and I would really like to create this. We always went like into a tunnel vision. Okay, it has to be this, and every idea that falls short of it, just no, can't use that. And it was just, I don't know, man. It's probably just us, but it often turned into a shit show that was very demotivating to us, where we're just like, okay, let's just stop for tonight. We all still love each other. It's okay. We had this one thing, like, I don't know if people know the movie Asterix et Obelix, Contre César. It has a great soundtrack, and I was like, oh God, we have to do something like this. This is great. Okay, man. It was like, okay, so what are you, in the end we're like, okay, so what are we trying to do here? Are we trying to recreate something? Yes. Are we going to capture that feeling that had for us when we first heard it? It just never worked out for us. So that's I think why we eventually got up to the point where we shy away from trying to recreate something that's already there, because we're, I don't know, it, if you try to recreate a feeling or idea for us, like, it's probably very different for other people. We always felt like we could fail. And that sucks, because you shouldn't actually really be able to fail in something that you enjoy doing, which might be a very hippy dippy thing to say, I don't know. I don't know. The things you say make me think, man, and I get all philosophical, and I think people will notice.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a difference between, you know, feeling like you fail to recreate something that you like, and but then there's the other thing where it's okay if you want to accomplish a certain thing or a certain sound. I think for us in the past, or even today, it's sometimes been the case that we felt very inspired by, you know, a different band, or, you know, a song by a different band, and we thought like, oh, I wonder how that would sound if we did it. Because at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, you shouldn't, you know, straight up copy something, because then you can only fail. But you are your own person with your own sort of like musical style, you know, and ideally. And then even if you feel like you're ripping something off, or if you're, usually that doesn't happen, because you're still you, and you're still, it's still your instrument or your voice. So it ends up being something fairly different. I mean, still there's usually I mean, that's the whole thing, like with pagan folk, with everything that we do, there's still resemblance of our influences, obviously. I mean, you know, it's the, I think we've talked about it a lot, you know, with our bands being compared to other pagan folk bands. So of course, because, you know, that's where a lot of the influence comes from. But I think it's still, you shouldn't be afraid to try and commit to an idea and sort of see that idea through, even though it can get frustrating. Like, if one person has a very strong, like, thematic idea of how they want a song to sound, but then maybe sometimes it's hard to sort of communicate that well enough to the others, especially if you don't just straight ahead want to, you know, write down for them precisely what they should play, which is, you know, never really a lot of fun. But if you sort of just describe to them, like, oh, you know, why can't you see? It's like, it should go like this, like, think about this. But the other person is like, this is like, I come up with this. I feel like I don't really understand what you're describing. That can be very frustrating. And I've been certainly at that point, or we as a band have certainly been at that point where someone was super stoked about a certain idea, but the others were, for a long time, were very confused about what that person wanted to, you know, sort of get into. And I think, and then sometimes you look back later and you think, wow, I can't believe how much we struggled with that very obvious thing. Because then ideally you end up with something that everyone likes, and you look back and it's like, why did we even struggle with that?
Yeah, yeah, it's surreal, isn't it? Like, it just brings back a lot of memories, like where trying to force something is never good. Guys, listen, guys and girls, sorry, it's the 21st century. I think it's definitely something that's very relatable for a lot of bands out there. And I don't know, I just really, really need to share this. I was listening to you just now. I was like, wow, I can't believe this is happening live. I met a kindred spirit, and we're talking about this actually very intimate process, behind the scenes thing, and there might even be people listening. So I just want to say thank you to you, Niklas, and everybody that listens to me saying this sentimental shit. So, sorry. This is just a sentimental interlude for you right here. Damn, man. It brings me back down to memory lane, because, I mean, we've been doing this for 8 years already, and I feel like we're just starting to emerge. Do you also have, like, that feeling that the first couple of years are sort of like a runway? We're just preparing to lift off, and that it just sort of started, and it maybe continuously feels like you've just started. This is it.
I think for me, it's been very gradually, and I usually mostly I feel pretty good about that, because I think, yeah, for most years, every, you know, consecutive year has been slightly better, like, in every regard. It's just that with like the history of our band, we in most recent years we had to restart quite a bit, because in 2018, you know, when our founding hurdy-gurdy player and harpist left the band, and then we had to play with two stand-ins for a year, and then now we have a new lineup, but we had to, like, it's so many new beginnings, and with that comes a lot of doubts and insecurities, of course. Mostly those insecurities are on me. a lot of other members of the band don't necessarily feel them, but in that way. But that's just because I worry a lot generally. I guess I understand what you're meaning. That sort of, it still feels like, I don't know, like it's still all just starting. And but I maybe that's how it feels for everyone, you know. That's like the thing with playing music and recording music. There's so much change in that you have to, and there are so many things that you have to adapt to again and again. So it never really feels like you arrive. I don't know. I've been only doing this for like since 2014. So I shouldn't like talk so.
Oh man, you're so highly a noob. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think what you're saying, the whole, it feels like it's just starting. I feel like we're just getting there. I feel like the most important thing, I feel like we haven't arrived yet, right? That's what you said, right?
Yeah.
I think if you ever lose that feeling, then there's a problem. Especially, or I don't know, it might be a radical thing like, oh, geez, man, I'm in a band. I feel like I've arrived at quite a good place. So get out my back. But it's sort of the journey. When will someone ever tell you that you're there? So I think, yeah, it's a sign of every good band with great people that are still growing, especially let's be honest, when you're as young as we are, and everybody's starting out or maybe hesitant to start out something, you're never really going to get there where you want to be. Yeah, I think that's actually a good sign that you're doing good work.
Yeah, I think it's definitely good to always sort of strive for the next thing, either be that like the next concert or the next album. I think it's important to sort of keep your eyes on the horizon and search for that. I don't know. For the end of the rainbow. I don't know where to go with this metaphor. I'm sorry.
The pot of gold. Or something. Yes,
I don't know.
It's great. Yeah.
I was trying to channel my inner coon there for a bit.
What's the inner coon? An annoyingly philosophical nutbag.
No, but just like with the very visual metaphors, with like, you know, the.
Well. We were going to actually also discuss like the recording thing. I do think that I don't want to rush that because it's very important and it has its own stories.
Oh, yeah.
For me, I would love to postpone that to a next episode.
Oh yeah. I think also, sorry for interrupting you. I think this has been more philosophical and a bit more broad thematically than I would have thought it would be. I sort of imagined that we would get a little bit more into the nitty gritty of like writing a song. But I think I've been really enjoying going sort of a little bit off board with that, you know, with that whole topic. And maybe we can elaborate a bit further on that in one of the next episodes, I think if we now would change the topic to go like, okay, but what should it be, verse, chorus, bridge, and then another chorus? Or I think that would be boring if we sort of went back into that stuff, right?
Yes. Like the thing where we've been sort of sharing our personal anecdotes, I'm starting to get very curious to maybe hear this from a different band. So maybe we can, yes, guys, I'm also putting this on Nicholas for the first time. Not Nicholas. Oh, it's actually pretty funny, your name. we maybe can delve into getting an inside look into another band. But first, I would maybe like to discuss recording, or we'll see how we go about this. Yeah, guys. Yeah, we always talk like an hour in advance, then we do this and we talk after. It gets blurry, but if you have like, oh yeah, man, I'm very curious to hear about how this band goes about it. Do know that we read all the comments and stuff that you post as well. I don't mind getting a bit more philosophical, and I think people will take more away from this and go, yes, we do an A part, then a B part, and we do the A part twice, then we think about making a bridge, and then we do a slight differentiation of the bridge, then we have a C part and an A, B, A, and then we end with another A because the audience likes it.
But that already is so relatable.
Oh, God. Yes. It's, I think, yeah.
There is this, yeah, it's so great because with us, Nina, who, you know, who plays flutes and whistles and bagpipe and also sings in Wildcards, she's really good with coming up with song structures. So pretty early on, there might not even be like a chorus for the song and something like that. She will just write down a song structure with like an A part, a B part, a chorus, a bridge, and like an instrumental part. And just by writing, you know, that down, it already really helps to visualize, sort of, because then you're, okay, now we need to come up with a chorus, and then we can put that there. And that's, it's so wild, because it's just like a bunch of numbers, or like a bunch of letters on a piece of paper, but then eventually, like, you fill that in with actual music. And then in the end, you have like this piece of paper where there's like a lot of notes scribbled in and stuff like that. But it also is an actual song, and that's so wild that you create something out of nothing. Basically, you just invent stuff, and you just make like wiggly air noises that fit together with other wiggly air noises, and then it's just like something that you can enjoy listening to.
So there you have it, musical theory serving the music that's already there. For, like you say, we have Nina doing that. I think we have I think Sarah's definitely our musical theory genius. And then I think we have a very prominent counter noise, sort of. My brother, whom I love dearly, which is, he's also very handsome. Sorry he's taken. I don't know why I'm saying this, but I just love him very much. He's like the big counter noise. He's like, yeah, nope, we're not doing freaking Zugabe. No, we're not putting that on the freaking set list. We're just playing this freaking song. No, we don't necessarily need another A part to serve this, whatever. We're not doing this. And it sort of keeps us grounded, but it's interesting because that's definitely how every song gets sort of analyzed from the bands that I have worked with, that I've been in, but also like other projects that I was like hired to play with. It's basically the foundation, the whole A, B, and it also serves a very clear purpose in the recording of the songs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So if there's anything that you, the audience, would like to go would like for us to delve a bit further into, maybe also some more like technical or like more precise things that we should cover, feel free to write us or to comment under this episode. Oh, wow, I just pointed down with my fingers like I'm in a YouTube video. Wow. Just don't forget to like and subscribe, guys.
Ring the bell.
Ring the bell. No, but yeah, seriously, do that. And also, if you are in a band and you feel like you have something cool to say, feel free to hit us up, me or Kuhn, or like our
manager,
the profile, our manager, yeah. Or like the profile for. Can we make Chloe our manager?
Oh, definitely, she would be down.
I don't know if it would reap us any benefits, but it would look good on paper.
Yeah, right. All right, I'm sorry. No, but yeah, so you know, just hit a drop us a line, as people say. And before this episode comes to an end, we shouldn't forget to talk about our two new songs to put on the playlist. Meet in Moonlight. Check it out on Spotify.
Oh, yes. The red wire through all of your lives. When will those next four songs be added to the playlist? My life has no meaning until this has happened. Oh, by the way, just a very quick in-between shout out. We have seen that the Daniel Itureira, sorry, I'm not very good at pronouncing this name, of Vail has listened to our podcast and shared us on Facebook, which is greatly appreciated. Thank you. We love you. Yes, you make great music. Yes, the Hell new yeah. additions.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you want to go ahead with your first song, or do you want me to start?
Both. So that doesn't help us. So I will start out with... I'm going a wee bit Nordic themed. I think we've sort of... we've brushed over it. But for me, the first addition to the playlist is... sort of a band that I've avoided a wee bit, not to sound biased, but a song that I really enjoy to this day, even whilst not playing it anymore, is a song by the band Sovulo, and it's called Skull. It's great with going up and down the energy spectrum. It has some amazing flute in it. It's seriously, if you guys know who plays that, hit me up. It's a great album, great artwork by Tovnar Robin. It's going to be added. Buy the CD and read the booklet.
Nice. I'm going a bit maybe like ritual style this week with my two additions. The first one is maybe. It's not like a band that would necessarily be at like a pagan folk or medieval folk festival, but I think thematically and musically, at least that song and that album sort of fit the vibe. And it's a band that's called Hex Vessel, which is a British guy who has now been living in Finland for a while. And I think they play sort of like dark psychedelic folk, maybe you could call it. And I'm adding a song off their first album, which is called Invocation Summoning, which is a great catchy tune that also has, sounds a bit creepy, but also sexy.
Just like you.
Hell yeah.
Wow, nice. Okay, well, the good thing is we don't discuss our additions to the playlist beforehand, so it's also always fun to hear them as we record this episode. And I think I sort of can add to the whole ritualistic atmosphere, actually. And it's a song that's been out for quite a while, and it's a song by... Anila, and it's a solo project from a vocalist and composer called Drea Drury in Canada, and she has this one great song. She doesn't have a lot out there, but there's this one great song where she's collaborating with Einar Selvik from Vardruna, and it's called Warrior, and I'm hoping it's on Spotify so we can add it in. Otherwise, it's on YouTube, the YouTube, and it's very great ritualistic and empowering song, which lasts no less than 11 minutes. I really like it.
Nice. So my second edition is by a Greek band, I think, which is also a country that hasn't yet been featured in sort of the playlist, and it is by a band that I've had the pleasure of seeing live at Festival Medieval in Germany, and was very intrigued by their music and their stage theatrics, and that band is called Demonia Nymphe. And yes, you know them, of course. And the song...
Well, yeah. Well, I think it's one of the first bands that I saw live without knowing what folk music was.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Where did she see them?
At a festival that is now bankrupt. I don't even remember the name, sorry.
Okay. So the song that I picked by them is a very obvious choice, but I think it's a great song. It's called Dance of the Satyrs. Satyrs, however you want to pronounce that in English. Yeah, just great song and very, very, I think, very different to a lot of other pagan folk or like medieval folk bands, and definitely worth checking out live, even just maybe like a YouTube video of a live concert by them, because they have a lot of visually very interesting stuff going on stage. So yeah, these are our new additions to the Mead and Moonlight playlist. Yeah, these are very, again, I feel like we say that every week, but these are still very turbulent times now, maybe even more than last week. As always, don't stick your head into the sand. You know, it's good to stay informed and to educate yourself about what's going on. Don't lose the spirit. It's cool to take time off the news and to take time off with everything that's going on sometimes, maybe, you know, for a day or two. Just, you know, keep your head in a book, play some Dungeons & Dragons, create some music, create some art, do all that fun stuff, and we can't wait to get back to record the next episode next week, when again it's Mead and Moonlight time.
Well said, Niklas, and just a small wisdom that I found to be a very useful. If you feel like a thought is going astray from you, don't follow it. If you feel like your thoughts are straying to tomorrow and it's still today and it's bringing you down, don't follow it. Stay in the now. Live your life. Stay in the now. Yes, well, so thank you for listening to this podcast right now. Well, yes, just thank you. This was, like Niklas said, the Mead and Moonlight, the Pagan Folk Podcast.